Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I'm your host, Ronak.
And I'm your other host, Greg.
Today we got a pretty interesting episode, I think. We're going to be taking a look at balance sheets. Hopefully this is the first of a three-part series where we go over the balance sheet, income statement, and cash flow statements for companies. I know accounting is not anyone's really favorite topic, but it is really important to understand what's going on behind the scenes at all of these companies, startups, whatever you're looking at, to really get a good fundamental understanding of how the company is operating, if it's doing well, if it's not, and just what are some of the numbers behind the company. Today, we'll be looking at Microsoft. Specifically, we'll look at their balance sheet from December 31st, 2022, and just step through some of the line items there and just define some of the terms and just chat a little bit back and forth on what seems like a good number, what seems like a bad number, and just try to get to a place where when we look at a balance sheet, it's not just like a wall of numbers looking at us, but we're actually able to understand the business in a little bit more detail. We'll also leave this balance sheet in the show notes so that way you can follow along as well if you are so inclined. Greg, just to start things off, whenever you hear the term balance sheet or you take a look at a balance sheet as a physician, does anything jump out at you or does it really just seem like a complete mystery what all these numbers mean?
I'm going to be honest, it's mostly a mystery. This is something that hopefully over the next several years, this is something I'm going to be able to teach myself is how to look at balance sheets and everything else that comes out in kind of the financial statements from especially public companies, mostly to get a sense of how well they're doing, especially because I am investing into the public markets, but also to be able to utilize that within the private markets, especially if we, you know, go out and do some like Series A, Series B stuff, is to be able to actually look at these things and understand the health of a company, because I feel like a lot of these statements can hide things that if you don't consider the entire kind of financial health of a company, you might miss something pretty big. Like I know when you think about Peloton, right? Like their revenue numbers look pretty good, but then you look at their debt and things like that and you're like, oh no, that doesn't look too good. So those are the types of things that honestly, I hope you can teach me, Ronak, because if you're a physician out there listening that has no idea what a lot of these terms mean, I'm right there with you. So let's do this together.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think especially when we go to angel investing, understanding this stuff is actually really important. Like you're saying, accounting is a funny subject where, you know, I heard this joke a while ago saying that an accountant can be anybody's friend because they can just fudge the numbers and the definition of the things to mean whatever you want them to mean. So I think it is really important to just understand what's going on here. So if we click over and start taking a look at this Microsoft balance sheet, the first section that we're going to see is actually called current assets. The first few items here are going to be cash equivalents and short-term investments. So when you add up all three of these terms together, it comes out to around $100 billion. So what this basically means is that if Microsoft wanted to create a checking account with as much money in it as possible, where they just go and try to fire sale all their assets as quickly as possible, the things that they have in their possession today that they can confidently say is worth X price and they could sell it extremely quickly, they would be able to put about $100 billion into that checking account. So this includes everything from US dollars to foreign currencies like the Japanese yen to government bonds like T-bills, and it could even include short-term investments like municipality bonds. If there's a bridge that's being constructed in a city and for whatever reason they're raising money through bonds, maybe Microsoft went and bought some of those bonds. They could sell all of those assets on the open market extremely quickly, and these are very liquid assets, so it's very easy to determine how much that they're worth. But the reason why most of these companies have this is or just have a whole bunch of liquid assets on their balance sheet is really just in case if like a huge financial earthquake hits where revenue for whatever reason dries up for X number of years, they can still keep the lights on, they can still pay their employees, they can take care of all their short-term costs and everything. You could say a small portion of this could be used for, if you think about an individual, we're always told to have an emergency fund, right? If you lose your job, how do you pay your grocery bills for the next 6 months before you can find another job? The idea of this portion is really trying to like keep the lights on. That's largely what it's for.
Let me ask it another way, Ronak. With that $100 billion, they've got to be making some kind of interest rate on that. So if you think about it, I just did a little back of the napkin math here. So $100 billion in cash and cash equivalents, if you think that's in some kind of yield earning account, that's getting like, I just put in 4%, but you can put in 3 or 2% because it's pretty easy math at that point. They're making like $4 billion in basically just free money from the interest rates now that they've been hiked up. Is that actually what they're able to do?
Yeah. So that's exactly right. Again, we're talking about cash equivalents and short-term investments. So that, especially that short-term investments, that typically is going to be like government T-bills or things like that, where they are yielding maybe like a 3, 4, 5%. It's not super risky where they're not trying to shoot for a 10X in 10 years or anything like that. But that is an area where they are getting yield. Now, I think it's extremely important here to remember that historically, these companies have had a growth rate much quicker than, let's say, 4 to 5%. And when you think about, we'll define this term later on, but return on assets and return on equity, that basically means that when a company like Apple or Microsoft or any one of these companies make an investment inside their own company, for example, in R&D, what is their typical ROI? How much return do they see on their investments that they're making? These type of numbers are typically, call it 20 to 30%. So if they invest more in R&D, they're actually going to be making way more money on that $100 billion than just that 4 to 5%. So that 4 to 5% is almost like a rounding error in some ways. Again, this could be thought of as that emergency fund. If they really want to get returns, they should be investing in R&D and other things like that.
Interesting. Yeah. So when you think about like the ROI from doing the R&D development of the iPhone, right? Like that category defining smartphone, if they hadn't put that money into that R&D, potentially their financials look a little bit different. If it's just like laptops and iPods and iPads, but not the iPhone. That's kind of an interesting thing to think about in terms of like where you put that money.
So just one real quick thing. So when COVID-19 hit, we saw the travel world shut down very quickly. And companies like Boeing to American Airlines to Carnival Cruises, all these companies were in big trouble, right? I don't think this pandemic, they were modeling this into their forecasts. And they all largely survived from a lot of help from the government. But if the government did not come in, would a company like Boeing have survived? That's why it's important for these companies to have these short-term assets on their balance sheet. And I think Microsoft in particular just does an incredibly good job at this. Again, $100 billion that they could get in cash in probably around 48 hours. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's also interesting to look at how they mix that, right? Cash and cash equivalents is a smaller amount. So it's $15.6 billion versus their short-term investments at $83.8 billion. So that's kind of interesting to see where they put that money. It seems to be mostly in something that's at least accruing some kind of interest and it is some kind of investment versus just like actual cash that's not really going to do much. But again, much more liquid potentially if they needed to do something.
To your point earlier, Greg, right? It's probably better to get a 4 to 5% yield as opposed to zero. If you can put your money into a 4% high yield savings account versus keeping it in cash under your mattress, why not get that yield? So I think it makes sense for them to have around 80, 85% in short-term investments as opposed to cash and cash equivalents.
It's also just an insane amount of money.
It's an insane amount of
Microsoft,
money.
Microsoft, man.
But we have to remember, this is also a multi-trillion dollar company. So when you juxtapose that next to $100 billion, is it a lot of money? I don't know. I could debate that.
But I guess that is something that startup founders should think about now too, is if you've raised a $20 million round or a $100 million round, probably just don't have your money sitting in a savings account that's making no yield, because if you do have that much money sitting in the bank account, at least you're making interest on it and maybe you can hire two or three more people with that capital that's just being created passively for you. So I would keep that in mind too. When you look at these like Microsofts and Apples, I'm guessing they're all pretty similar in terms of where they keep their cash. Most of that, the majority of that, is making some kind of yield.
That's right. So now moving on to the next line item, we have what's called accounts receivable. And for Microsoft, it's looking that's around $35 billion. So accounts receivable is basically when they have a customer that's agreeing them to pay money in the future, but Microsoft has not yet received the cash. So for example, Microsoft works with a lot of other businesses for their products and services. So maybe there's a contract between Microsoft and one of these other companies where one of these other companies will pay Microsoft $1 million a year for the next 10 years to receive some sort of service from Microsoft. Now, that $1 million over the next 10 years, per year over the next 10 years is $10 million in total. But again, Microsoft doesn't have that cash today. So what they can do is put that into this accounts receivable bucket, where they're basically saying that eventually we are going to get this $10 million. We don't yet have it today, but we still want to value it, right? This is still a net positive to Microsoft. So this is how they can put on there. And then we also see in this line item where it says net allowance for doubtful accounts, and that's around $485 million. So basically what that means is that when you have these contracts, maybe there's some company that can pay it for 7 years into a 10-year contract, and then for whatever reason they go bankrupt and they're not able to make those final payments. How much does Microsoft have to lower that number by based on bankruptcies and other type of issues where they thought that they were going to get paid, but ultimately did not get paid? This happens all the time, but these numbers tend to be relatively small, especially when you're looking at a company like Microsoft that has that works with other businesses and institutional clients. But basically, from a high level, what we're looking at here is how much money do other people owe Microsoft based on their contracts for purchasing products and services.
So this is also, though, with that net allowance for doubtful accounts, that's almost like a risk within their future revenue. Is that basically how you think about it? And I'm guessing that comes into account when like Microsoft is putting out guidance for future quarters, is they're taking into account, I guess they have to take into account then the health of those accounts, where those account receivables are being taken from. Any idea how they actually do that? Is that just like a KYC, know your customer kind of thing? Like you have to know. So if this is First Republic Bank or SVB, right? And like you have $1 billion coming from both of those, is that basically just like similar to a venture fund where you write that down and basically say that's likely gone?
So the net allowance for doubtful accounts, that's basically money that Microsoft think that they've already lost. So that's backwards looking, not future looking. And I don't know the exact GAAP accounting for how this is determined. My understanding is that if an invoice is outstanding for more than 90 days and there's a reasonable expectation that Microsoft has that they're not going to get paid, then they can put this in that bucket and saying that, you know what, this just seems like we're not going to actually get this revenue.
Interesting. Yeah. Just the technical stuff, man. It's actually interesting. Let's keep going.
Yeah. So the next item that we see here is called inventories, and that comes in around $3 billion. That's largely what you would expect, right? Let's say Microsoft sells a bunch of Xbox devices. Maybe they have X million of them just sitting in their warehouse. They're all ready to go, but they haven't sold them yet. So this is inventory. Now, inventory is a little bit tricky to understand if this is a positive or a negative. On one side, they are assets that they could sell those Xbox devices. It's important that they have them created and have them sitting there as the customers come and want to buy them. But on the other side, if inventory gets too high, you also have another problem. That did you build too many of these devices and you in the future are not going to be able to sell them, right?
So like Peloton.
Like Peloton, exactly. And then you start having costs where just housing the devices becomes very expensive. And inevitably, if there's maybe like wherever you're housing the Xbox or Peloton devices and a sprinkler system accidentally goes off and all the inventory is damaged, what happens then? It is a little bit of a risk to a company to have too much inventory. And it could sometimes be a sign that they're just not getting the sales that they were expecting. So this is like one of those interesting numbers where as an investor, you just hope for not too much variation in this number over time. It's hard to know what exactly is a quote-unquote good number versus a bad number. You just don't want it to be too volatile.
I think it's also interesting for Microsoft too, because I'm assuming that your inventory really only counts for some of the hardware that they're making, not necessarily like software, right? Software is, I don't think it would be considered inventory, right? Potentially sitting in the cloud. It's like not an Xbox. It's not a computer that you're selling. It's not something that has to sit somewhere physically. So I'm assuming that's why I also was like, that number is pretty low in terms of an inventory number, given how much revenue this company is making. I'm assuming this is only for hardware that needs to sit in a physical location that is considered inventory. So if you were to look at like Tesla, right, I'm assuming their number for inventory is going to be pretty high, and some other people that have physical products mostly, rather than Microsoft has hardware, software, both. But I'm guessing this is only hardware.
Yeah, that's right. Inventories are only hardware. If you have a software product and that's sitting there, that's not inventory. Yeah, because if you think about it for a second, if Microsoft is selling Microsoft Word, you could say that they're waiting on 10 million new clients, but that's not really a
housing. It's not like it's on a disk anymore.
Exactly. So yeah, inventories are going to be hardware only. And then the last topic that we have in the current assets category is going to be other current assets. This could be a whole bunch of different things. I'm sure they're just lumping a few things together here. It's coming in at around $19 billion on the balance sheet. So when we add up all of these current assets together, it's coming to around $158 billion, with the vast majority of that being in cash equivalents and short-term investments. Current assets in general, you could think of them as, if Microsoft wanted to, again, sell all of their assets as quickly as possible, what's a reasonable amount that they could put into their checking account? The cash equivalents and short-term investments are going to be by far the most liquid and easily understood of what they're valued at. Things like accounts receivable, inventories, things like that, they're a little bit more difficult to value in that same way. But from an accounting perspective, we like to lump them all together, especially accounts receivable, right? If for whatever reason Microsoft is having a little bit of trouble, they can sometimes sell those accounts receivables to other companies and liquidate them. Same thing with inventory. If they did want to sell their Xbox devices for a lower price just to sell them quicker, a lot of times they can. So that sort of summarizes the current assets, just things that Microsoft has where they could get rid of them very quickly if they just want to raise as much cash as possible.
Interesting to note, they actually have links out to additional kind of spreadsheets, which you can actually click into and see exactly what those cash and cash equivalents are, where they're stored, how much is stored in which location. So if you wanted to do a deep dive, you definitely can. Interesting, I just clicked on one of them and there's a lot more information.
Yeah, and what's really interesting from the inventory side when you click on that is that you can see the raw materials versus the finished product. So again, if you're making an Xbox, you probably need maybe a little bit of raw metals to go into it. So that those raw metals are still valuable, and Microsoft is definitely putting those on their balance sheet. So moving on from the current assets, let's look at some of the longer term assets. So the first one is going to be property and equipment. So this is largely real estate, manufacturing plants, if they own a bunch of tractors, just like physical hardware that they've bought over the days, this goes into that category.
We'll have to do an episode on McDonald's then and look at exactly how much their property is worth in their balance sheet. That'd be a fun one to do.
Yeah, absolutely. McDonald's is a very interesting case study. For Microsoft, looks like this property and equipment number is coming in around $83 billion. This is interesting, right? So like when you think about Microsoft, this company that creates all of this technology, you don't really think of them as having over $80 billion of just like random property and equipment. I'm sure they have a bunch of office buildings. They have Microsoft stores here and there, but like over $80 billion of property and equipment. That's really interesting. I think that sort of shows you like what goes on behind the scenes of running a massive company, probably a lot more than initially meets the eye.
And it's also interesting, this one does not have a hyperlink, so it does not break down where those numbers come from and what percentage is property versus equipment. I can imagine that they're, for like you mentioned, the Xbox, like they probably have some manufacturing equipment somewhere that is going into that.
And this is where you can be a little bit tricky with your accounting, right? So if you bought a piece of, if Microsoft bought a piece of land for one price and that property value has completely dropped or completely skyrocketed based on some of the other properties around that area, do they actually mark up or down that land value? You can be a little bit funny with this kind of stuff. So that's why I think it's important to just dig into the numbers in a little bit more detail. And just FYI, whenever a publicly traded company reports earnings, they have to do a very detailed financial statement for all of their balance sheet, cash flow, and income statements. So you can usually get a lot more detail around each one of those topics on that, on those documents. Those documents are a lot of times hundreds of pages long, very confusing wording. Unless you have a very deep financial background, it's hard to understand, but all that information is there. So now after property and equipment, we also have operating lease. So that comes in around $13 billion. This is one of my least favorite things on the balance sheet. Whenever you sign a lease, technically that lease is an asset. Doesn't really make sense to me. I would say this isn't too meaningful of a number. You also have this on the liability side to offset it.
That seems odd. So you're basically saying if you rent an office and you have a lease, it goes in as an asset? That's pretty...
This is where some of the accounting rules are just a little bit funny, but it is what it is. If you want to strike this out, you can. I don't think that this is too important to look at when you're looking at Microsoft balance sheet. The next one, equity investments. This is actually pretty cool. So Microsoft owns about $7 billion in stock in other companies. I'm sure if we looked at Berkshire Hathaway, this would be a huge number. That's really interesting that at least for some portion of Microsoft's cash, they're actually going and buying other companies or making investments and things like that.
So this is a kind of interesting one to talk about. So this is $7 billion as of December 31st, 2022. However, Microsoft, we know, made a $10 billion investment into OpenAI. So are you saying that next quarter's balance sheet will show $17 billion potentially? And also, that's an interesting number. They basically, they made one investment more than any of the investments in total that they've made into other companies, into one single company in OpenAI. Is that basically what we're saying?
Yeah, I do think that you have to remember that I don't think Microsoft has a huge venture capital arm. Like, you don't have a Microsoft Ventures the way that you have Google Ventures or Intel Capital. So maybe equity investments is just something that Microsoft hasn't decided to deploy a lot of their resources on.
It's just interesting to see that, like, they see OpenAI as such a huge player that they're willing to put in more capital than they have right now, and at least in this quarterly balance sheet, that they've ever put in before, it seems. And we'd have to go back and look at their other kind of quarterly balance sheets to see what numbers were those equity investments numbers. But that's an interesting thing to just see how much they're interested in this AI angle, is at least how I'm taking.
Yeah, so Greg, we do have to go back to that angle of what is actually being described on these balance sheets and how much detail. So it's a little bit unclear looking at this, if this equity investment includes private companies or only publicly traded companies. So this goes back to the idea of, like, actually having to go through the footnotes and details of the larger financial statement. The balance sheet gives you a good, quick understanding of what's going on. But if you really want to get the nuances, going back to that 100 plus page document is important. And now the last two topics that we'll talk about here are goodwill and intangible assets. So goodwill is basically when one company buys another company, if you get rid of the tangible assets, the raw assets that the company is bringing to the table, that extra amount is, you could think about as brand value, is going onto Microsoft's balance sheet. So for example, when Microsoft bought LinkedIn, right, maybe they bought it for $20 billion, maybe around $1 billion was actually like core stuff that they were buying, and the rest of the $19 billion is just the brand that LinkedIn has and the potential that LinkedIn has over time. So you lump that all together as goodwill. So that basically means that over time, Microsoft has bought around $67 billion worth of company that was not actually stuff that they were buying.
See, this is always a weird one to me because I see this in other balance sheets. It's this like goodwill thing. How the hell do you calculate quote unquote goodwill? Like when you look at people's balance sheets, like they're all over the place. Like I've looked at GoodRx's, I've looked at Peloton's and like Nike. It's like, how do you quantify goodwill?
So the way that I would think about goodwill is how active are they in M&A? Are they buying up a whole bunch of companies that are maybe overpriced? So goodwill is something that I actually look at as a little bit of a liability. I know it's on the asset side of the balance sheet, but this is something that like company is clearly spending a lot of money and maybe it's worthwhile, maybe it's not, but this is more of an indication that they're going and acquiring a lot of companies.
Yeah, see, this is something that I find super interesting because I'm pretty sure if a public company has never done M&A, they still have goodwill on their balance sheet, right? It's only if you acquire a company is really? And also just looking at, I'm just going to take quickly a look at trying to find Peloton's balance sheet where it shows their goodwill because I'm pretty sure it took up a gigantic portion of their current assets was their goodwill.
So it's not only acquiring companies. That's going to be the vast majority of it.
Actually, Peloton's goodwill has gone down significantly since their previous year. So in 2021, their goodwill, net goodwill was 210. I think this is in millions. And it's dropped. Yeah, it is in millions. And it dropped to 41 million. That's a gigantic loss of goodwill.
Is that they're just writing that off, which is not a good sign of a company. Yeah, and then the last thing here is intangible assets valued at around $10 billion. Those can be things like trademarks, patents, different pieces of soft assets where you can't hold them in your hand really, but Microsoft can still put a value on them. So when we add all of these assets together, it comes out to around $365 billion. That Microsoft has, which is quite a bit. A lot of times people will remove goodwill and intangible assets to calculate tangible assets. So in Microsoft's case, that's coming out at around $280 billion. So another way to think about that is if Microsoft wanted to just, again, sell off all their assets, everything that they have, the way that they're valuing things today, they could put together $365 billion. And this might take them a lot of time, a lot of negotiation, and they might not actually be able to pull this off. That's part of the problems of what happened in the banks in 2008. But still, if they want to sell off all of their assets, shut down their business tomorrow, they could theoretically put together $365 billion, which is a pretty incredible amount when you think about it.
And what's their current market cap? Do we know that?
Around $2.5 billion. $2.5 trillion.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think honestly, balance sheets are a little more interesting than I anticipated. And I think one future episode we should do with a company that did a lot of financial gymnastics, specifically within their S1, which is basically the form you fill out when you eventually want to go public. Rona, can you guess who I want to take a look at their S1 and look at the financial gymnastics that they did? It's a company that's recently been part of a TV show.
I have no idea.
So Adam Neumann, when they were filing their S1, they created their own basically EBITDA formula. And so I would really love to go through that S1 in a little bit of detail and just go through a little bit of the financial gymnastics that you can do, which eventually will, if you're going public, they're going to be seen because you have to actually report these things, which is the interesting thing for private companies. You don't have to report any of this, which is why someone like Elon Musk, when they bought Twitter, took it private. He can now do whatever the hell he wants without prying eyes, without having to have the whims of shareholders and investors bring up the stock and bring down the stock. Now he can just do anything he wants. Maybe he'll eventually bring it public again. But this is an interesting one to go through in terms of like how you look at balance sheets. I actually enjoyed this quite a bit.
Everything that we talked about today was just the asset side of the balance sheet. We don't want to throw too many accounting terms at you too quickly all at once. So we'll follow up with an episode on the liabilities and shareholder equity side of the balance sheet as well. So stay tuned for that episode. Thank you for listening.
See you next time on the Physician Syndicate Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate Podcast.